something that is relevant to this week's Parsha, but really relevant to every day of your lives moving forward. Not only your lives, my life, and every Jew's life. It's a very important topic that comes up all the time. We are confronted with issues as we journey through the rest of our lives. We have very complicated structures that sometimes we are going to find ourselves in. Sometimes working environments, sometimes other places that we're going to be. And in this week's Parsha, we read about Kedoshim Tiyu. We read about our obligation to remain holy. At the very end of the Parsha, we read all about the different details of Gilui Arayos. When you think about Gilui Arayos, you say to yourself, how many people do you know that would violate some of the prohibitions that are stated in the Torah of Gilui Arayos? We are religious people. We don't normally do such things. So why do we need to focus on that? Because I think you can be a very righteous person. You can be a very well-meaning person. And everybody, in the end of the day, is a human being. And people make mistakes. And when we talk about Gilui Arayos, we don't only have to go to the extreme, like the Torah describes in some of the relationships that are prohibited, that are forbidden. But what I want to talk about today is a much more familiar area of Gilui Arayos, which is the prohibition of Yichud. People are often not careful about the prohibition of Yichud. Dr. Pelkowitz told this to me probably 15 years ago, but I assume it's still true today. I haven't asked him, but I assume it's still true. He said almost all of the cases that he has been involved with personally that have had sexual impropriety, all of them would have been prevented if only people were careful about the laws of Yichud. Chazal knew what they were talking about. The Torah knows what it is talking about. People are people. We don't believe that everybody is evil. People make mistakes. People have taivas. People fall into things that they otherwise would never see themselves doing. But we need to take precautions, and we need to do whatever we can to make sure that we are safeguarding ourselves and others not to fall into situations that we don't belong in. Yichud is one very important first step. So I thought, although there are many things to talk about in this week's Parsha, it is full with many different topics and different ideas in halacha, I thought this was one that as you experience your last class here in Stern College for the year, or for some of you for your lives, maybe this is something that we have an opportunity to just reinforce. Now, when we talk about the laws of Yichud, this is something that we can have a whole series on. Of course, we are not going to be able to accomplish everything in one shiur. I just want to go through some of the highlights. I'm going to go through it based on the order that it shows up in Shulchan Aruch. I know that I'm going to be cutting off a lot of the details of Hilchos Yichud because we just don't have time to go through all of it. And what I want to go through is whatever we can get through. Some of the things that I thought were very relevant were, is there Yichud when driving in a car? I think that's a very important topic, especially those of you in the room who are not yet married. I'm sure you're going to be going on dates. The way things are looking right now, you may not want to go on the subway. You may end up going in a car. And the question is, are there any issues that you need to think about or you need to be aware of when going on a date with a member of the opposite gender and being in that car at certain times of the day or times of the night, certain streets where there's nobody around? It's something to think about. So these are scenarios that maybe we don't often think about, but we need to. So let us begin. The Gemara, all about Yichud, can be found in Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Pei, and it goes all the way till Daf Pei Beis. It's two full Daf Gemara that talk about it. This finds itself codified, the Halacha and the Rambam, in Hilchos Yisuri Bia. It is also in Shulchan Aruch. Eben Ezer Simon Chaf Beit. So, the first thing that we need to know is, the Gemara writes explicitly in Maseches Sanhedrin, as well as in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Yichud is considered to be a Isser de Araisa. Now, not every permutation of Yichud is de Araisa, but fundamentally, Yichud is considered to be a biblical prohibition. Sometimes people get the feeling, it's just Yichud, it's not such a big deal. The truth is, it is a big deal, because it's just as big a deal as some of the other Torah prohibitions that we sometimes talk about. Yichud is on par with all of those. And many of the Rishonim follow in that line of thinking of the Gemara that Yichud is considered to be a biblical prohibition, an Isser D'Oraisa. That includes Rashi, Tosos, the Rosh, the Sefer Achinuch, the Tur, the Shulchan Aruch. Many, many of the Rishonim and the Poskim assume that Yichud is a Isser D'Oraisa, and we need to be very careful about it. One extremely fundamental question regarding the whole underpinning of the Isser Yichud goes as follows. Do we assume that Yichud is considered to be an extension of the prohibition of Gilui Arayos? Or do you say that maybe this is some kind of independent Isser? And the question is, why would it matter? What does it matter which classification you put Hilchos Yichud under? What does it matter which heading it belongs under? Either way, the Torah says it's prohibited. So whether it's part of Gilui Arayos or not, shouldn't really matter. The answer to that is a very important distinction. We mentioned last week in one of our other shiurim that generally we assume the Torah says if I have to make a very painful and difficult choice between violating a certain prohibition in the Torah or giving up my life, we know that the Torah says you have to violate the Torah prohibition and stay alive. V'chai b'hem. You're supposed to preserve Jewish life as much as you possibly can. Except for three notable cases where the Gemara says, by Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shvichas Damim, by those three notable exceptions, we would say, if I'm given a choice either to give up my life or violate the prohibition of Gilui Arayos, the halacha is, I have to give up my life and not violate Gilui Arayos. I have to give up my life and not violate the prohibition of Ritzicha. Those are the exceptions to the rule. Again, three exceptions. Every other time in halacha we say, if you're given a painful choice between one of those two options, you violate the halacha and you go on living your life. That is the halacha. So here the question is, this would be a very important and relevant question to think about. When we talk about the prohibition of yichud, are we describing something that is part of the general category of yaharig val yavar because it is an extension of gilui arayos, or would you say not? This came up recently because I had someone in Israel who had called me because he owns a home in a certain community. He has a pool in his house, and they were being really, really generous and really kind, and they were allowing people who were mufunim from the south, people who were displaced from their homes in the south, they were allowing them to come and use their pool. So all they did was they put a sign-up sheet, and people were signing up, and it was a really nice opportunity. So one fine day, he was working in his house, and he had a couple of women who had come to go use the pool, and then all of a sudden, there was a siren. And he had to run to a shelter. And he runs into a shelter together with a few women who had just gone to come swimming in his home. And it turns out that he was going to be in a shelter with a closed door together with only himself and these couple of women who had come to go swimming in his home. So what's the alternative? He was concerned maybe I'm violating a prohibition of yichud. The alternative would be if I stay out of the shelter, I'm risking my life potentially, God forbid, a missile, a rocket can fall on his home and he could die from that. So is he mechuyev, is he obligated to risk his life, to give up his life potentially, for the prohibition of yichud not to be violated, or would you say that that is something that is not expected of him? That is a very important question. After I gave the shiur in my shul about this topic, there was somebody in my shul who told me he's an avid listener of my shiurim, and after that he said he could not listen anymore because he was so offended that I even brought up the question. Okay, I'm sorry that people are offended by the question, but it is actually a very legitimate question in halacha. It's not clear. What?
The ski lift incident.
The ski lift incident is true. Yes, this is a major question. And the place where it comes up is not only in modern day situations. It comes up actually in the late 1800s. There was a Talmud Chacham who nobody ever heard of. His name was Reb Leib Bulachover. Guarantee you nobody ever heard of him. But he did write a sefer that is quoted often in some of the discussions about Yichud. And that is the sefer called Shem Aryeh. And he has the following scenario. So what is the scenario that he raises? He raises the following question. Let's read it together. Nish'alti. He said, I was asked the following question. B'maisa shahaya. There was a story. B'isha achas mebnei hakfarim. There was a woman from a small town. Asher b'hakshosa b'lidita. She was in active labor. And she had to go to the hospital. But there were no hospitals at the time. So the question was, shalcha le'ir b'yom ha'shabbos lahavi mi'aledas ivrish. She wanted to have a midwife come and help her deliver. And the question was, what do we do? What do we do? Now, why is that a question? Of course, we do whatever we need to do in order to help her give birth to this child in a healthy way, in as safe a way and healthy way as possible. So here was the question. Ha'agalon haya'eni Yehudi. The wagon driver that we were going to send, this midwife lived in a different town. So the wagon driver that was available to bring her, the midwife, from the other town here, is not a Jew. V'nistapku eich la'aso. So the question is, what should we do? So the wagon driver shows up at her home. Should she go alone with this non-Jewish wagon driver? Then that would mean that she would be violating the prohibition of Yichud. Or should her husband go along with her, who of course is not going to be qualified to help this woman in labor, he's not going to do anything for her, but maybe we should send the husband along and he should violate Shabbos by going in the wagon. But this way, he'll save his wife from violating the prohibition of Yichud by her going alone with this non-Jewish man to go help this woman in labor. You understand the question? So we had a toss-up here. Is it better to violate Shabbos by sending someone who doesn't need to go, but this way we are going to protect ourselves from the prohibition of Yichud on the wagon, Or is it better to violate Yichud and say, you know, Shabbos is Shabbos and whatever, Yichud is going to be what it will be. Yeah?
I just missed something. Which husband would we go?
Her husband, the midwife's husband, would go along, which would save her from the prohibition of Yichud. But of course, he wasn't going to do anything in terms of the actual labor and delivery. He didn't know how to help her. His wife was the professional. So the question is, how do we deal with that? And that is the question that the Shem Aryeh raised, and many other Svarim subsequently picked up on that same issue and wanted to know which choice should be made. Should we say that Yichud is considered to be something that is so important that we would say, maybe it's even Yahar Gal Yavar. Maybe it's something that we definitely cannot violate because I have to be willing to give up my life, and therefore that would change the situation here. So the overwhelming majority of the poskim, other than some notable poskim who said otherwise, Reb Shlomo Kluger said otherwise, but the overwhelming majority of the poskim, Reb Moshe Feinstein is quoted as saying the same thing, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach also said that it is more important that, of course, we go and save the woman's life and we do whatever we can in order to help her, but the overwhelming majority of the poskim say that Yichud, although it is part of the category of Gilui Arayos, and it smacks of Gilui Arayos a little bit, we assume that even though Gilui Arayos, one would have to give up their life, here we would say, when it comes to Yichud, I would not be obligated to give up my life. I would say, Yavar Va'al Yeharik. It's better to violate the Isser of Yichud and don't jeopardize your life in order to be able to do that. That is the general consensus of the major poskim of our generation, that even though Yichud, again, as we said, has some correlation, has some relationship with Gilui Arayos, we don't assume that it is fully in that category and you would not have to give up your life, which gets to your question about the ski lift. Did that question actually ever happen, or is that just a theoretical question? Apparently there was a couple on a date, and
it's a real story.
It's a real story? Yeah. So apparently there was a couple on a date, and they got stuck on a ski lift, and then the guy realized, oh, it's Yichud, because we're stuck on a ski lift all alone, nobody's around, but what was the alternative? So the alternative is somebody has to jump down. So I don't know. Did he volunteer her? She did?
No, she was freaking out because she was like, she was 16. She was freaking out.
16 on a date?
Yeah, he was 19.
That's problem number one.
And so she freaked out and she jumped off and she broke her nose.
She broke her nose. Okay, my father tells the story a little bit differently. My father told me, I think he said this happened in his days. I think so.
40 years ago.
My father's 41. So my father told me that in his days, he even knows who the person was on the date. But I think he said it was on a Ferris wheel. I'm not sure. Either a Ferris wheel or a ski lift. Yeah, something. Anyway, it went to the Supreme Court. You know that? So it went to, so he knows who the person on the date was. Whatever. Long story. He talked to him another time. But my father told me that the way the story went was afterward they sued the ski lift. And then they sued the state, right, whatever. And the counter argument was, who told you to jump off? You should have just waited. And they said, no. Well, there's prohibition of Yichud. Okay, the prohibition of Yichud, but you shouldn't have risked your life. No, we have to risk our life. And the whole issue in court came down to this point. Do we say that Yichud is Yahar Gal Yavar or not? And I think at the time, did they ask her, Moshe Feinstein, I think, whether Yichud would be Yahar Gal Yavar and whether or not she had a right to risk her life in order to get out of the prohibition of Yichud? Is that what her religion would expect of her?
Or Rabbi perhaps Herschel Small.
Rabbi Herschel Small was what?
He testified that Talmud did sitting on the chair overnight with the young lad.
Exactly. So that's really what it came down to. I don't know who Rabbi Herschel Small is, but there was a big debate, and the debate really revolved around this issue. Should we assume that Yichud, as bad as it may be, maybe it's not rising to the level of Yahar Gal Yavar, and therefore you didn't have to jump off the ski lift. So, if this ever happens again, the answer that Ramosha and many others say is, we do not expect that people are going to endanger their lives in order not to violate the prohibition of Yichud, which does not mean that Yichud is not important. Yichud is very important. It just means that Yichud doesn't rise to the level of one of the big three, and one would not have an obligation to risk their life in order to make sure to stay clear of that. So here, I quoted from one, I'll get to your question in a second. Here, I just quoted from one of the Yichud Svarim where they write a story about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. If you want to read it here, it's a number gimel. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said that anytime shenichnas lechashmalit lenesia, anytime he got into a chashmalit, which means some kind of electric device that used to move around. So either that means a trolley or a car when they first came out, I'm not sure. Misoreris etzlo she'elo shel Yichud. He said, I always was wondering about Yichud. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, I was always worried, am I going to be stuck in the train alone to be the last one together with the conductor, and then I'll have to jump off, because maybe that will be a problem of Yaharik Valyaber. So again, these are situations that many of the Gedolim spoke about, and it's something that we need to think about as well, hopefully in much simpler situations, but every so often you have these unusual and rare circumstances where these questions do come up. Yes, you have a question.
Was it an issue when the ski lift was moving, or only when the ski lift stopped? Like, they still got on the ski lift.
Good question. So, is it an issue when the ski lift is moving? I think we're going to have to get into the next part of the conversation, and then that may answer your question. If not, ask it again. So, this part may be a slightly uncomfortable part of the conversation, but it's critically important to the details of Yichud. The question then becomes, yeah?
Did we say about Shabbos, like the Seder Tevet?
You can read here. He gets into the whole discussion. So, there's just a lot to talk about. Not enough time. Amanda got the bus at 4. We got to move. So the question is, how long does one have to be together with the opposite gender in order to violate the prohibition of Yichud? Do we say, if you just go into an elevator, the elevator is going to go from one floor to the next floor, you're in violation of Yichud right away? It takes 30 seconds. Maybe if you say, if I'm in a big building and I'm going from the bottom floor all the way to the top of the Empire State Building, so it's going to be longer, I don't know how long that takes, but it's going to be a longer duration of time. Would that be a problem of Yichud? So how long does one have to be together with the opposite gender in order to violate? So if you look here in the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe writes, he was actually responding to the potential concern of Yichud in an elevator. Somebody asked Rav Moshe, is there ever a problem to go into an elevator with a member of the opposite gender because maybe we're going to get stuck, or maybe we're going to just be going together in the elevator for a couple of seconds and maybe that's a problem of Yichud. And Rav Moshe said, that is not the way the laws of Yichud work. Explains Rav Moshe as follows. Let's read it together, number Dalit. Hashir, what is the minimum amount of time that I have to be together with the other person in order to violate Yichud? He says, Im hu gaspa isha shenichnasa imo. If this is a woman that I have a prior relationship with, I know this person, I feel very comfortable with them. So even if you have that, even if that's the person that you end up in the elevator with, hu asur b'shir bia, that means the amount of time that it would take me to have an intimate relationship with this individual, that would be the problem. Now, are you possibly in an elevator long enough with someone that you would be able to have an intimate relationship with them before anybody else walks in? Sounds very unlikely, says Rav Moshe, because in a normal building, it's going to potentially stop on any floor. Anyone can press a button on any floor. So it sounds very unlikely. Explains Rav Moshe as follows. Ach tzarech nosaf lazek tzas kashir. Rav Moshe writes something very fascinating here. He says, it is not only the amount of time that it would take two individuals to be intimate with one another, but he says, you have to include, I'm sorry for the gory details here, but he says, you would have to include lishkav v'lifsho me'abegadim, ad kedei she'yehev sharas legalos ha'ivar, and v'gam l'halvish kemetchila. He says, you have to add on time to get undressed and then to get dressed again. Let's say somebody would walk into the elevator. I wouldn't want them to see me like this. So I would have to have enough time to get undressed in order to be intimate, and then to get dressed again in order that I should be able to cover up what just happened. So Rav Moshe says that takes a lot of time, and not only that, he says, we're not even talking about that, but he says even more. When you have somebody who meets another individual in the elevator, even if they have tremendous affection for one another, and even if they want to do something that seems very uncomfortable to any of us, but still, it takes time for them to discuss what their plan is. Right? So Rav Moshe says you have to take that into account also. It's probably going to take 3, 4, 5 minutes for them to discuss, well, should we do this? Is this really safe? Does it really make sense? Can somebody walk in on us? How are we going to cover up the heavy evidence? How are we going to make sure that we're safe here? So all of those things, says Rav Moshe, come into the equation when we talk about the zman of the shir of Yichud. And therefore, he says, he thinks that this would be something that is hard to imagine, that if you're going in an elevator, that would be something that would be potentially an issue, because this takes a lot more time than one would ever spend in an elevator. Again, if you're going on one of these elevators in the Empire State Building, I don't know how long that is. Amanda can tell us, but I assume that this is something. It's your last day here. Everyone's going to miss this, right? So we imagine that that this would be something that may be a little bit more questionable. But in general, says Rav Moshe, just think about how much time all of this requires to get dressed, to get undressed, to talk to each other, to then cover up. It would just be a lot of time. Therefore, says Rav Moshe, he thinks, in an elevator, this is generally something that we don't have to worry about. However, Rav Moshe then has another tshuva, an additional place, where he talks in Yarudeya about a woman who needs to go to the mikvah. Now, He just used that example because that was the example of the question that somebody sent him, but it has nothing to do with the mikvah. A woman needed to go somewhere. Her husband was staying home watching the kids. So how is she going to get there? She didn't have a license. She didn't have a car, so she was going to take a taxi. So Rav Moshe says, what are you going to do? You're going to take a taxi late at night to go to the mikvah in another town, and it means that you're going to be alone in the car together with this other individual who's of the opposite gender. So isn't that a problem? So this woman presented Rav Moshe with a question. I have to go to the mikvah. I need to leave my husband home in order that he should watch the kids. He's not able to drive me. He's not able to come with me. So how do I get there? The only option I have is to take a taxi, but I'm going to be alone in the taxi together with this person, even if he's a wonderful person, but isn't that yichud? So, if it's just taking a taxi 5 blocks away from your house, that's probably not enough time, like Rav Moshe just said. But if we're talking about a situation where you're going to have to drive somewhere to go to that location, this is what Rav Moshe discusses here. So let's read it together, number. Hey, Bidvar Isha, says Rav Moshe, what about this woman who sent me the question, Shetzricha Lisa a taxi, that she has to go in a taxi, le mikvah shebe'ir acheres asmucha, because she has to go to the mikvah in a neighboring town, which is not in her own. Vaday tov im noig ha-taxi hu ish, shahabal yisa ima. It would be better if her husband would go with her, sha'areyu samach la'erev, because after all, this is already almost nighttime. She ish chashash yichud af b'derach krova, v'ovrim sham harve machines. And he says, if it was during the day, machines means cars, so there are cars all over the place. We're not concerned that anything's going to happen because people can see in the windows. Mishim shekasha az liros, but if she's going to go at night, when it's already dark outside, people can't necessarily see into the car windows. And therefore, he says, that should probably be a problem. So Moshe says, he thinks that this is something that we would have to be concerned about, and that is something that he worried about. What if her husband is unable to go with her? Kagon she is tinok babayis. He has to watch the kids. Ve'ein mi sheyeh imo. Ein lesser lalisa b'taxi. He said, bottom line, I would not tell her. If her husband was not available to go with her, I would not say that she has to stay home. Kivan du asuk b'malachta. Because the bottom line is, the taxi driver is doing his job. The taxi driver is focused on his job. He's not going to get into the back seat together with the customer. He might, but it's very unlikely, says Rav Moshe. And therefore he says, he thinks if you can try to go on main highways, on main roads, where people are going to be driving by, that would certainly save it. But the point being that Rav Moshe already brings to our attention this notion that perhaps going in a car with someone can be a potential prohibition of yichud. I know people in our neighborhood, young, religious men and women, who in their state of engagement have been in the back of a car together with the person who they're engaged to and have done things that they regret and they feel very upset about and they're embarrassed of it. They've come to speak to me. I know that things happen. How do these things happen? These things happen because we're not careful to make boundaries for ourselves. Because a couple will stay out till 2 o'clock in the morning when nobody's around. They'll pull up on some side street somewhere because they want quiet and they want privacy, which is all very nice. A couple should have privacy and a couple should spend time together, but it should all be measured and it should all be in a way which is appropriate. If that happens, that's something that can then lead to other things that you don't want to happen. But the first step of it is to put boundaries for ourselves, not because we don't trust the other person, but because we shouldn't trust ourselves. Because people are human beings. It doesn't mean the opposite gender is evil, doesn't mean that they're terrible, it just means they're human beings and they make mistakes. And we all make mistakes, and sometimes we make mistakes that we regret later on. So I'm just putting it out there. You think it will never happen, it will never happen to you because you heard this. But it does happen to other people who are otherwise wonderful and trying very hard to be Shomri Torah Mitzvos, and one thing leads to the next. And just it's important to just be careful of that. Now, before we take your question, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach points out that even though it's true that we have this amount of time that is needed in order for a violation of Yichud, let's say, what are we going to call it? How long would you say that is? I don't know. Argument's sake?
Well, I was going to ask last minute, but I should have looking into it. Like 1.5 to 5 minutes. But that seems really
short. 1.5 to 5 minutes is a prohibition of Yichud?
I can double.
Okay, let's say 5 minutes. All right, let's say 5 minutes, okay? That's enough time to do everything that Rav Moshe described that we don't have to repeat, but let's say 5 minutes, okay? So says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, don't say to yourself, okay, the Isser of Yichud only sets in after 5 minutes. But if I'm going to seclude myself for the first minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, that's not a problem. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, if you could stay in this situation and be here for the next 5 minutes, then even from minute number one, you're violating something wrong. You're not allowed to be here. You're not allowed to put yourself in that situation. And that's what you see here in the bottom of the page, number above. Reb Shlomo Zalman feels very strongly about that, that you have to be concerned that maybe if somebody is in a situation of Yichud, they have to be concerned even from minute number one. They don't wait till minute number five to start thinking about whether or not they're going to be violating the prohibition. The Gemara does add another caveat to all of this, which is that although Yichud is usually being together with somebody of the opposite gender, the Gemara says, Baderech, when you're on the road, Ad Shiyehei Shlosha, you need to have three people there. Why do you have to have three people there? So let's see. Says the Gemara Maseches Sota, which it looks like I put here on number Zion. Amar Rav Yudah Amar Rav, Lo Shanu Ela Be'ir. When we talk about Yichud and we say one member of this gender together with a member of the opposite gender would be a problem of Yichud, when we go Baderech, when we're traveling on the road, Baderech Adi'ika Shlosha, Shema Yitzdarech Echad Mehem L'Nekavav, V'Nimtza Echad Mehem Isyached Im Ha'erva. So he says, if you have a situation where you're not going to have extra individuals there, you have to be concerned. Maybe somebody, as you're traveling, is going to go for a pit stop somewhere. Someone's going to go buy a snack somewhere, go into a rest area, and then you're going to be left in the car with the other person. So you have to have an extra person involved in order that you shouldn't violate that. Again, the Gemara is emphasizing that when we go on trips, we have to be concerned about the fact that sometimes people are going to do things that they otherwise would never imagine doing, but they find themselves in a situation, I didn't protect myself properly. Even when I went out on the trip, I thought everything was fine, but then somebody excused themselves to go into the rest area. You have to worry about such scenarios. You have to think about them in advance. Question, yeah.
Yeah, I have two questions. First, yeah. I saw an advertisement for Lyft, which is like Uber, that they had an option to request a woman driver as like a pro woman. I don't know. Is there like a little help to do that?
It's for Yichud.
It's like more expensive.
See, why are they allowed to do that? Why is that not like, why is that not illegal?
I have no idea.
Like in Israel, when you had Get Mahadrit. Yeah. Like, how long is it till someone gets sued for that?
They did.
It's gone?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful concept, but how can that be? Now, the truth is, I think it's in Parshas Behar. The Torah says that you're supposed to, if you have an option to do business with a Jew or to do business with a non-Jew, you're supposed to choose the Jew. Assuming that all factors are equal. Assuming that. We have two stores in the neighborhood. Both of them sell at the same general range of pricing that is reasonable. So then I should favor the Jewish business over the non-Jewish business. But if I have Costco versus Gourmet Glot, that's not... I mean, for those who don't know what it is, it's okay. You'll live life fine without it. But if I have Costco versus a local Jewish supermarket, that's not what the Torah means. So here... You're saying if you have an option to take a male driver or a female driver, of course taking a female driver is better. I would say that in general. Forget about Judaism. No?
Even if it's more expensive.
Again, where are you going? If you're going here and you're in busy streets and you're around, then there's really not such a concern. The concern is, again, the concern, let's say, by people who are dating, is that after you finish your date, you go and you drop the girl off, I hope, right, at her home, not the other way. So you drop the girl off at her home, but like you're not going to drop her off in front of her house. Like you don't want to sit outside and talk in front of the driveway, like see who's looking out the window. So you're going to go, right? You all have younger siblings. So you go somewhere quiet and you go sit by, you know, by the driveway to the park where at 1 o'clock in the morning, nobody's there. That's where you have concerns. Yeah. Yes. Yes, but it depends how old the child is. If the child is old enough, it says that they can understand if something uncomfortable would be going on, then that would be good enough. This becomes relevant actually for a different halacha, which is so unfortunate when it happens. When you have a chupas nida, right? So sometimes, in the days of Chazal, I would imagine this didn't happen too often because they didn't prepare for a wedding like we do. Now, we prepare for a wedding months in advance. We set a date for a wedding way in advance. And then it could be that somebody's cycle doesn't work out as we would have expected it to. Surprises happen. Things happen, right? We're all human beings, so things happen. So The question is, how do you deal with a chuppas nida? Now, there are a bunch of questions. Number one, how does the chassan put the ring on the finger of the kala if she's a nida and he's not allowed to touch her? That's small problems. That's no big deal. The bigger problem, much bigger problem, is what do they do in terms of yichud? After the chuppah is over, they have to go into the yichud room together, but they're not allowed to be alone. So what do you do then? And bigger problem than that, how do they go home that night? So you may not be aware that when this happens, we put a child in the yichud room, which is very uncomfortable. But you can't put like an infant. You put like a 10-year-old, which is like really awkward. Yeah, so I would suggest go to your OBGYN before, try to figure this out. If it ends up happening, not a big deal. This has happened to many people before. And whoever your Masada Kedushin is will deal with it accordingly. Yeah, any other questions? Okay, we should move forward. Okay, so let's continue. The question then becomes, Rav Moshe was asked, what about if let's say you have an elderly man who needs help in the house, and the only aid that's available is a woman who can take care of it. So isn't that a problem of yichud every day, every minute of every day? No? Or for that matter, let's say you have someone who unfortunately has Alzheimer's and needs to be taken care of. And the only person available to take care of that individual is somebody who is from the opposite gender. Either a man is sick or a woman is sick. It goes the same in either direction. So in these cases, Rav Moshe said, and Rav Avadia writes about it as well, Tzitz Eliezer has many tshuvas about this. It's much more complicated than I'm saying. I'm just giving you the bottom line. Rav Moshe says, if we're dealing with someone who no longer is at the stage of life or has the energy to be involved in an intimate relationship with the opposite gender, then you don't really have to be concerned. After all, that really was the concern of Chazal, that if we don't have this safeguard, if we don't make sure that yichud is a priority to us, and that we safeguard people from going to an inappropriate place where they don't want to be in a relationship with somebody else, then we have to be concerned that that may happen. So here, in this situation, the assumption is that if the individual who is sick is in a stage of life where they are just simply unable to, either it means they're too old and they have no energy left, or even if they're young, but they're just not physically capable of being in an intimate relationship, then we would say, generally the poskim say that that is something that would not be a prohibition. A common misconception is when we deal with siblings. So, would there be a prohibition of yichud for somebody to live together with his mom? Right? For a man to live together with his mom, or for a woman to live together with her dad? So let's say, for example, I'm not talking about stepchildren. I'm talking about my natural parent. But it's only me in the house. Let's say parents get divorced, or somebody's, for whatever reason, someone is not in the house, and you are left in the house with the opposite gender, but it is your parent. So what is the halacha there? What is the halacha there? It's fine. Why is it fine?
Is it your parent?
And therefore? No, you're right. You're not wrong. Nothing's going to happen. Why?
Because
incest is something that is not normal, yeah. Right? It's a terrible thing. Incest is not something that most people have a burning desire to be involved with. You have some sick, deranged people in the world who may involve themselves in such behavior, but that is not the norm. And therefore, we assume that because normally a father does not have a tremendous desire to be intimate with his child, with his daughter, and a daughter doesn't have a tremendous desire to be with her father, and the opposite direction in both ways. So therefore, we would assume that being together with that individual is not a problem. What about siblings? What about siblings? So the Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, if you look here, the Gemara in Daf Pei Aleph Amud Beis, says the Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin, something which is not so clear. And you'll see at the end of the Gemara even throws in something that you're going to be shocked to hear. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav Asi, Misyached Adam Im Achoso, as you very correctly pointed out, a brother and sister are allowed to have yichud together because it's not normal that a brother and sister are going to have any feelings to be intimate with one another, so we don't have to be concerned. Says the Gemara, Vidar Im Imo Vim Bito. And for that matter, I'm allowed to be Miyached with my sister, a brother and sister. A boy is allowed to be together with his mother or together with his daughter. All of that would be the same. There would be no concern. Ki Amar Kamei de Shmuel. When they said this halacha in front of Shmuel, Amar, he said, Asar lehisyached im kal araya shavatar. He said, what are you talking about? The brother wouldn't be allowed to marry his sister. It's in this week's parsha. The boy wouldn't be allowed to marry his mother. And the boy wouldn't be allowed to marry his daughter. The man wouldn't be allowed to marry his daughter. So if you're not allowed to marry any of them, it means you're not allowed to be alone with any of them. So how can you be How can you say that a brother and sister are allowed to be with one another and there's no prohibition of yichud if, after all, isn't that one of the list of Gilei Arayos in our Parsha? It says a father is not allowed to marry his daughter. A mother is not allowed to marry her son. It says a brother is not allowed to marry his sister. So if that's part of Gilei Arayos, doesn't that mean that you're not allowed to be alone with one another either? There's a prohibition of yichud. That is the discussion in the Gemara. It gets a little bit more complicated than that. But look what Shmuel says. Va'afilu im ha-behema. You're not even allowed to have yichud with a behema, which is a whole separate discussion that I would love to have another time, just not now. Are you allowed to have yichud with your dog? Many people in the world who are alone feel a tremendous amount of comfort being with an animal. Right? It's very comforting to have an animal to cuddle with. The Gemara here discusses whether there's a prohibition of yichud with a behema. So if you have a whole family and everyone's together and everyone's living in one house, that's not yichud. But if you have, let's say, a person who's alone, who then has an animal that gives them comfort, the Gemara discusses whether that would be permissible or not. Again, for another time, just putting it on the radar, that this is something that the Gemara does talk about, and the Poskim discuss it as well. So the bottom line is that it's not 100% clear from this Gemara what the takeaway message is. Does the Gemara say that there is a problem for sisters, for brothers and sisters to be together? Or would we assume, I should say that in the singular, for a brother and a sister to be together, would we say that that is a problem of yichud? Because after all, it is one of the arayas in the Torah. They're not allowed to marry each other, so maybe it means they're not allowed to be secluded with one another either. Or would you say, like you said, that, what do you mean? That's not normal. No brother and sister have feelings for each other. I mean, they may love each other, but not in an intimate way. And therefore, we don't have to be concerned. This is a major dispute among the Rishonim, what the bottom line of the halacha is coming out of this Gemara. And many of the poskim seem to come to the conclusion that we should say that as long as the brother and sister are going to have yichud be'akroi, which means in a non-permanent fashion, so it would be permissible. That is the conclusion of the major poskim that we would follow on many other halachos, like the Chafetz Chaim, the Aruch HaShulchan, many other great gedolim say the same thing, that we would assume that it would be permissible for a brother and sister to have yichud with one another, but not to have yichud in a longer type of way. Meaning, for example, you're in Manhattan now, and you're in university, and your brother's also going to some university, so why should we each have to rent some apartment somewhere and pay twice as much? Why don't we just take an apartment for the year and both live together? Two separate rooms, of course, we're going to be appropriate, but we're going to be alone in the apartment every day. That would be something that the poskim say is not allowed. But let's say, for example, I go to Israel, and we're going on a little trip, and it costs an exorbitant amount of money to take out another hotel room, and I'm on the trip, and my sister's on the trip. Can we take out, one apartment together where the two of us are going to stay for a couple of days? So there we would say that would not be a problem. As long as it is what we refer to as be'akroi, as long as it's not something that's of permanent nature, that would be allowed. So let's see how Rav Moshe formulates that here in number Yud Aleph. Hanachon Nadina, he says the bottom line is Kidakasapti, Shehu, Sheyehe Biyaso Lebesa Baofen Hanikar, Shehu Rak Levaker. He says, how do you say, where do you draw the line? What would you say? How long does somebody have to be staying in another person's house to say, oh, you're there as a permanent resident? Where's the cutoff? What would you say, Olivia? What would you say? Just
4 months.
4 months? What would you say, Amanda? 3 weeks, yeah? So you already have a discrepancy here. Machlokes Acharonim here, right? What would you say? Emily, what do you think?
A month.
So everybody has their own definition. So Rav Moshe says, it's very hard to say what the cutoff should be. Should it be 3 months? Should it be 1 month? Should it be a week? It's not so clear. Rav Moshe says, here's the way I understand it. Hanachon Nadina. Kidakasati. Shehu. Sheyeh biyaso lebeisa ba'ofen hanikar. Shehu rak levaker ulehisareach. When a brother comes to stay by his sister's home. Again, and we're talking about where there's no spouse involved, no children, nobody else. A brother and a sister are going to be alone. He says, it has to be in a way where everybody who sees understands you're just a visitor. V'gam, shelo yasha yosar mishir har gilas ba'oso makam lehisarchos. Most people, if somebody would call me up and say, I'm coming in from Israel, would you mind if I stay by you? I say, of course. I have a basement. I would love you to stay by me. What is my assumption how long the person's going to stay? Like, what's the maximum that I think they're going to stay when they say, I want to be a guest by you? What did I have in mind? What?
A week.
A week, right? That would be reasonable. Unless the person says, I'm really sorry. I just forgot to tell you, I'm staying for 6 months. I think that would be very inappropriate. All of us would agree that that's not an appropriate request. Now, if your name is, anybody here from Fairlawn? No? Anybody here ever heard of Rabbi Yudin? Rabbi Yudin's a big tzaddik, and his wife, big tzaddikus, everybody knows. I remember as a child, my father used to go speak in Fairlawn for Shabbos. We would go there. There were all kinds of crazy people roaming around their house. If you talk to the Yudin children, there were people living in there for months at a time, like nobody even knew what was going on. But that's very unusual. That's not the norm. If you're calling Rabbi Yudin and you ask, can I stay in your house? Yeah, the assumption is I'm moving in for life. But that's not the assumption in most of our homes. Most of us would say there's some reasonable amount of time where we would say, you know, past this is really not appropriate. And I would never let somebody stay that long. I mean, I wouldn't throw them to the street, but I would get uncomfortable. So it says Rav Moshe, V'gam shalo yasha yoser mishir ha-regilas bo'osa makam l'sarchos. Whatever is considered to be normal in your situation is something that is acceptable. I remember during COVID, there was a group of people in our neighborhood, a group of women, actually, young women who were in college at the time, and all universities went online, I believe, at the time. And it was like for the foreseeable future, everybody was going to be in online school and not have to show up in class. So there were a group of firm girls who said, look, we don't ever have to daven with a minyan. We don't have to like have any responsibilities here. So they all called up the Chabad in Hawaii. They flew out to Hawaii and they bunked out there for 6 months. They had the best time. They were all, it was such a smart idea, right? They were all on Zoom school anyway. They had, you know, they were in a country with nobody else they knew. They just like had the time of their lives. So if you need a minyan and you need Sifrei Torah and you need all kinds of things, so it's a problem. But if you don't, so they were really smart and they went out there. But like it wasn't strange. The Chabad rabbi was like so thrilled to have people there forever. And I asked one of the people who was there, I said, wasn't it weird at some point you just like stayed in this guy's basement for 6 months or whatever he did? She's like, no, he was so happy. It was amazing. Like his kids have never seen another Jew. So it was, you know, again, it depends where you are. Rav Moshe says the standards may change. Depends what kind of community you're involved in. V'gam yesh chilek ba'mi makam rachok le'ba'mi makam karov. It depends. If your brother comes in from Israel, so it makes sense. You'll host him for 2 weeks. If your brother comes in from New Jersey and now he's coming to New York, it's not normal that, I had a wedding in New York tonight. I'm going to stay by you for 2 weeks. Like, it's not normal. That's not the norm. So Rav Moshe says, really, it's very subjective. And it really depends on what is considered to be normal and acceptable in your particular community. And that is really the way to think about that issue. So that is in terms of that. Okay, I want to go a little bit further into the next issue. Let me just find where I am. I prepared a lot more than we need. Okay, one thing to keep in mind is that people don't realize, you think sometimes that yichud may only apply to a married woman. It's not correct. Yichud with an isha nida is also considered to be yichud. A nida is considered to be one of the arayos in the Torah. It is an issa d'araisa for a man to have an intimate relationship with a woman who is a nida. And therefore we assume even if somebody is single and they are a nida, then that is considered to be a very serious problem of yichud, which is something that everyone should keep in mind, because generally in our community we have a custom that women who are not married do not go to the mikveh. Women who are not married do not go to the mikveh for this very reason. What is the reason? The reason is because we assume if somebody is about to do something wrong and they say to the guy, hey, you're about to violate an iser kares of being bo'al nida, he's probably not going to want to do that, right? So as a safeguard, we say that generally single women in our community do not go to the mikveh. I know my father tells the story that there was, on one occasion, there was, I don't know why I'm saying this in a shir, but there were people who do things wrong. And one of these individuals who, not going to mention what their professions were, but they have a nightlife. And one of these individuals once came to my father and asked whether she should go to the mikveh, because she said, I have some Jewish clients who come and, you know, I don't want them to violate the Isra Nida. So he said she's a very firm prostitute. It's very interesting that this is what bothered her, that she wanted to know whether she should go to the mikveh. And the problem is when showing up to the mikveh, they ask, are you married? And she didn't know what to say. So she wanted to know, should I wear a ring so that they don't ask me? When I come to the mikveh, they'll assume that I'm married. Question for another time. We shouldn't have to deal with such shilas. Like somebody once told me, we should write a separate sefer called Shilas of Tshuvas America. We have shilas that are very unusual and very strange. But the point being, that is one of the reasons why a woman who is not married should not go to the mikveh. But because of that, that means that an isha nida is considered to be an erva, an arayas to a man. And as a result of that, yichud would apply equally to a single woman as it would to a married woman as well. The Mishnah does say that if you have a situation where ishto misham raso, so the Gemara says as follows. Let's read this together. The Gemara Kiddushin on Daf Pei. Here, if you look at number your base, Reb Shimon Omer, Reb Shimon says, it's a Mishnah. Af ish echad misyached im shtei nashim bizman she ishto imo. A man is allowed to be together with two women as long as his wife is with him, v'yashen imahem bepundiki. So if they're all in a hotel together, which again, we would never do this. We would never take out a hotel room. But back then, you know, there was an inn somewhere on the side of the road. People ended up in a room. And the question was, is this man allowed to be there? So it says, even if his wife is sleeping, he's allowed to be in the room together with these two other women because ishto misham raso. He's not going to do anything wrong if his wife is in the room. Now, it's a very interesting caveat that the Shevet HaLevi, Rav Bosner, writes, and he says, if one's wife takes sleeping pills, and as a result of that, she's out for the night, or she's on some kind of heavy medication, and you assume she's not going to wake up, or she's a super deep sleeper, then he says, that's not what the Mishnah describes here. The Mishnah's talking about somebody who's an average sleeper, and as a result of that, if you hear something strange going on in the room, you're going to wake up. In that case, the Mishnah says, as long as ishto misham raso, as long as his wife is there together with him, we don't have to be concerned, which really comes up often when you have, let's say, a couple who no longer has any children in the house, but they have a live-in maid. And the question is, what is the status of that individual, right? What is the status of that individual? That person lives in my house, but presumably the wife is going to be there all the time. And that's exactly what the Gemara says here, ishto misham raso, as long as his wife is there. But what if you're in a situation where you know that your wife is not available? She goes on a business trip for 3 weeks and she's not around. This is a serious problem of yichud that often people do not consider and they don't think about, but it's something that we definitely do need to think about in terms of that. Now, the Gemara says another comment in Maseches Kiddushin on Daf Pei as well. If you look here, number Yudalid, Isha Achas, Misyachedes im Shnei Anashim, says the Gemara, one woman is allowed to be together with two men. Why? Because we assume, what's the assumption? Two men are not going to be inappropriate together with another woman. We're dealing with normal people. Most normal people wouldn't do that. Maybe if one man and one woman are together, we can assume maybe something will happen. Each one of them will make a mistake, do something they shouldn't do. But when we're dealing with two men, the assumption is two men are not going to do something inappropriate in front of the other one, and they're not going to do something inappropriate together, and therefore the Gemara says that's fine. However, says the Gemara, Amar Yivna Amar Rav, Lo shanu ela b'ksheirim, that's only talking about when you're dealing with normal people. Ksheirim means regular people. However, b'prutzim, if you have people who are not careful about these kinds of matters, afilu be'asara namilo. Even if you have 10 men together, yes, we have to assume that something can potentially go wrong and they have no shame. And we've seen the breakdown in society and civilization today. Nobody is ashamed to do anything wrong. Everyone is proud. Look at what goes on the internet and see what the trends are. And you understand, people no longer have shame. People are not embarrassed to do things wrong in front of others, even when they're going to be called out on it. So says the Gemara, the only time we say that a woman is allowed to be together with two men is if those two men are average, normal ksheirim. But if you have people who are prutzim, people who are not careful at all, then says the Gemara, afilu be asara namilo. Even if I have 10 people together, we have to be concerned that all the 10 men would potentially do something wrong together, or one of them would do something wrong in front of the others and not be ashamed and have no problem. So therefore, the Gemara says that it would depend on that. This is quoted lahalacha in the Shulchan Aruch, and it says in the Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch writes it as well, listen to the formulation of the Shulchan Aruch, and then listen to the Rama. How many Sfardiyot do we have in the room? Just one? Two? Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch is more machmir on this than the Rama. Listen to the Shulchan Aruch. Lo tisyached isha achas afilu im anashim harbe. Says the Shulchan Aruch, a woman should never be alone, even with many men. Shulchan Aruch seems to be saying, we don't trust anybody. Doesn't matter how many people are there, doesn't matter how much you think they're going to be ashamed of each other, a woman should never be alone with many other men. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Ramah comes along and he says, no. When we say that, it means with men who are not kosher men, with men who are not careful. But if we have Anashim Ksherim, if we have men that are generally upstanding individuals, we don't have to be concerned that if there are a bunch of men together, that they are going to all do something wrong, they are all going to make a mistake, and they are all going to lead themselves to places where they shouldn't be. That is the machlokas between the Mechaber and the Rama, Svardim, and Ashkenazim. Now, the million-dollar question here is, how do you define, and I find this fascinating, I don't want anyone to be offended, because I'm going to give the caveat 2 minutes after I say it. So just hang in there, okay? Just hang in. Everyone calm down. So the question is here, how do we define, that's one way to get everyone to listen, how do we define, what is the definition of someone who is parutz? How do we define someone who's kosher and someone who's not? Like, what did you have to do to say, you know, we're going to brand you as someone who's not kosher, and you cannot have yichud, even 10 of you can't have yichud with a woman. Like, what did I have to do in my life? Eat non-kosher food? What would you say? Non-kosher food? She had no relevance to this, right? Why? What? Just because I talk Lashon Hara or I eat non-kosher food doesn't mean that I would ever do something in the realm of Arayus. So that's probably irrelevant. So what would be a relevant criteria to say that if you do X, then you are now no longer to be trusted with issues of Yichud, and even if there were 10 of you in the room, we would have to be concerned. What does a person have to do to gain that very special title of being a parutz?
Nida.
What?
Nida.
Nida, meaning?
They're not careful about the violations of Nida.
Well, that would be obvious. Then you're not careful about Gilei Arayos, right? So is that it? Most people are careful about Nida. Again, let me qualify that. Different people are careful in varying degrees, but people don't usually, I think people in our community don't usually violate really Surei Nida, which are Surei Kares. So what would you have to do? I hope. Yeah?
Would you say it's similar criteria to what we spoke about with regards to Kasha? So like if we know someone's a sinner in like other areas,
correct,
we also would interest them here.
So this is something that the Rishonim struggle with a little bit to figure out. What is the criteria to say that somebody should no longer be considered a kasher, and they are now considered to be off limits in terms of yichud? And it doesn't matter how many of them there are going to be in the room, you're all off limits, you're all treif. What do you have to do? Well, the Shevet Alevi, who's Rav Elsner, lived in Bnei Brak, and just to understand the context here, America is very foreign to a gadol who lives in Bnei Brak, right? I'll give you an example. A number of years ago, probably 20 years ago at this point, Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman, who was considered to be the leader of Haredi Jewry in Israel, Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman was brought into America on a trip. They wanted him to visit a bunch of different communities, and he came. He was already in his 90s. And it was a trip of inspiration, a trip of chizuk. At the time, Rabbi Usher Weiss was much less famous, and they had asked him to come along. They knew he was a good speaker. They had asked him to come along to be the translator for whatever it was that Rabbi Steinman was going to talk about in Hebrew or Yiddish. He was going to translate it into English. Okay, very nice. So Rav Usher Weiss has a lot of different stories from that trip. It's interesting. So one of the things that he told me was that they went to California. They had an evening together with a bunch of mechanchim and mechanchos. All the schools got together and all the teachers. And they were having an evening of chizuk for all the educators in California, in one area in California. So he said at some point they opened it up for question and answers. And one of the rabbeim in the room asked the question, you know, is it appropriate that a rebbe in a yeshiva, and you know, at any grade level, should be playing ball with the students? On the one hand, it will make us, you know, look very impressive to the students if we're good ball players. On the other hand, you know, I'm the teacher. I shouldn't be doing that. So that was the question that they asked. And Rav Usher Weiss said, I took the liberty not to translate the question. He said, like, you're talking about a gadol from Bnei Brak? Like, what? The Rebbe is going to play ball with the kids? What? It's not appropriate to ask that question to someone who's totally out of the realm of the reality that you're dealing with. You have to explain 1,000 assumptions before you get to that, right? So we have to think about that. You know, they once asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky whether you're allowed to play basketball on Shabbos. You know the story? So he asked them, you know the story? So they asked them, so he asked, what's basketball? So they explained to him, it's two baskets, two teams, back and forth. He said, I don't understand the Shiloh. Why can't you put the ball into the basket before Shabbos? Then you have no question. So, again, it shows the godless of Reb Chaim Kanievsky that he was so focused on his learning and his life, which was all learning Torah, that he didn't even understand what was being asked. It's not a condemnation of him. It's the purity of an Adam Gadol who lives in a different setting. So, the Shevet Alevi writes, when trying to figure out what exactly is the definition of someone who's considered to be a kasher, and somebody who would be defined as a parutz, who no longer can be trusted with any areas of yichud at all, and we cannot risk it with this individual. How do you draw the line? And he writes, if somebody is accustomed to watching television or reading the newspapers, that would definitely brand them as being a parutz for all matters. And if you have 10 of those people in the room, they cannot... Okay, everyone calm down. If you have 10 of those people in the room, they cannot be trusted for anything. Okay, that is the opinion of the Shevet HaLevi. He writes in one of his tshuvas, there are other svarim who write the same thing. And you may be wondering, like, really? I know a lot of good Jews who watch TV and who read the newspaper every day, and who probably I wouldn't be concerned that they would do anything wrong if I was in a room with 100 of them. So, what exactly is this about? Along comes the Sefer Minchas Chaim. You ever heard of the Minchas Chaim? The Minchas Chaim is a tshuva sefer that is written by Rav Noach Isaac Albaum, who lives in Queens. He's a big Talmud Chacham, but he's Mishalano. He lives in our community, and he deals with American scenarios all the time. And he says, you know, let's think about that. Let's analyze this for a minute. Do you really believe that anyone who watches TV is automatically considered to be, you know, off as far as, you know, preaches goes? You are considered to be so beyond the pale. Or Rav Chaim Kanievsky is quoted as saying, anybody who has an iPhone, forget about it. You are for sure considered to be a poet. Along comes Rabbi Albaum, who's a great Talmud Chacham and a big posek in Queens. And he said, like, really? I know many great Jews who do these things and who would never be caught doing anything like this wrong. So let's read it, because I find it really interesting, where he talks about modern orthodoxy. It's interesting. This is a good fun fact. In how many tshuva svarim are you going to find the term modern orthodox? Very few. So here he writes, Hine la'anias daiti. You have it? Everyone with me? Number tesva? Hine la'anias daiti. Pashut, da'afilu l'fi debrehem. La b'chada machta machtinu. You cannot put every Jew who owns an iPhone, or who watches TV, or who reads the newspaper every day, you cannot put all of those people in the same category. Devadai, it's true. You, Rav Vosner, who lives in Bnei Brak, Kimo Yerushalayim or Bnei Brak or Vedome, if you live in one of those neighborhoods in Yerushalayim, in Mea Shearim or in Bnei Brak, and you buy an iPhone, yes, you are considered to be a parutz. If you sneak off and go to the internet cafe in Tachana Merkazit from Mea Shearim, yeah, that is considered a major scandal. But if you happen to be in seminary and you grew up here in the United States and your family has 16 computers all over your house and you have every member of your family from the age of 15 has their own phone, and not just a phone but has their own smartphone, then you going to an internet cafe in Tachana Merkazit is not going to be the same thing as the Jew who sneaks out from Mea Shearim to do that, correct? Very logical, makes a lot of sense. And he says, Shemuskam etzlam de shomer Torah mitzvos. It is assumed in these communities that to be defined as a shomer Torah mitzvos, lo yistakel b'televizya, de nechsham etzlam toeva, you would never look at a television because that is the height of, I don't know what, of preetzus, of horrific behavior. So he says, Lachain, if you live in that community and that is your standard, Misha Poritz Gederzeh, if somebody is caught doing that, Vadai Nechshav Kiparos, then you are considered to be someone who can no longer be trusted. However, he says, Ulam, Yesh Makomas Kemo B'chaim Shel Orthodox Moderni, there are some people who live in a modern Orthodox community. Shemei Olam Lo Kiblu Lesser Histaktus B'televizya Me'ezetam Shiyah. He says, I don't know why, but it's become accepted that they all watch TV, and nobody has a problem with it. And it's not considered to be a violation of our Tznius standards to watch TV. And therefore he says, L'maisa, I know them, Behem Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs Gemurim. You can't say they're all Mechallel Shabbos just because they watch TV. They watch TV because that's the societal norm in their community. And therefore he says, B'kiyai gavna vadai lo nechshavim kiputzim. I found that to be very exciting, very interesting, that he draws a distinction here between a situation where it depends which community you're a part of. And in order to be defined as a parutz, it may mean different things coming from different places and being in different communities. So that is an important issue to be aware of as well when we think about this line that the Gemara has in terms of asara upritzi, as it says, when we have 10 people who are going to potentially create an issue, that really depends on which community you live in. A very modern-day shaila that has been raised by Rav Asher Weiss and some of the other very modern-day svarim is, what if you go on a private jet? Now, there's a reason why the shaila was never asked in the past, because people didn't do these things, but now our generation thinks that this is normal to go on private jets when you need to go somewhere. So the question is, sometimes when you go on these private planes, it's just you and the pilot. I was once in my life at an APAC convention in Washington, and a guy comes over to me. It was when I was in the White Shul. It was 11 years ago. So a guy comes over to me at the convention and he says, how are you getting back? I said, I'm taking the train. He said, do you want a ride? I'm like, oh, great. You want a ride? I thought, Like, a ride means a ride. Little did I know a ride meant he has a plane. So I'm like, oh, cool. All right. So we go out. I said, where are you parked? I thought his car was there. He's like, no, I'm waiting for a taxi. I'm like, we're taking a taxi? He's like, no, a taxi to the airport. I'm like, oh, okay. So he starts telling me, yeah, I'm a pilot. I bought this plane many years ago, a tiny little plane. I'm like, all right. What kind of plane is it? He's like, it's just a two-seater. It's just the two of us. So I'm like, you're the pilot and I'm sitting next to you? It's just the two of us? So he said, yeah. Anyway, scariest thing I've ever done in my life. Never doing it again. That's not when they talk about private jets. It's not what they're talking about. This is a tiny propeller plane where you fly, like when they say under the radar, yeah, you're flying under the radar. Like you think you're going to hit the Brooklyn Bridge when you come to New York. That's what it feels like. So it was the scariest thing ever. And he thought it was the most enjoyable experience. He sends my wife a picture in the middle. He's taking selfies. I'm like, can you keep your eyes on the road, please? Anyway, so the question is, if you have a situation like that, if you should ever be in such a strange circumstance where somebody offers you a ride and you have not clarified what kind of ride they are offering, so would there be a potential problem of yichud? Or say, for example, you get engaged and your chassan is so creative, he decides to take you on a helicopter ride, right, for the engagement? Anybody does that? I don't know. No, it's a good idea. You should tell him.
My cousin did it.
Okay, so you see. So Rav Asher Weiss actually writes about this, and he says, "Bimatos prati, hayurak shnei moshavim avur hatayas v'hanoseya." In a private plane, there are only two seats. There is the individual who is the passenger, and there is the individual who is the pilot. "V'im timtzilam rashayna iser ele mechashash bi'a menina didan yesh lahatir sharei ein klal efshar shi'avoli debias iser." There is no way in the world, if you only have two people on a plane and one of them is expected to be the pilot, even though, yes, it's true, there is such a thing called autopilot, that the plane does fly by itself, but the pilot is not just going to jump around and start being involved in all kinds of inappropriate things when he, at some point, needs to get back to the road. He's not going to be able to be that distracted with whatever it is that he may do. "De'ena tayas yachal asiyach daitu ulaniach es ha'haga uklei ha'tisa miado af the rega kat." He's not able to do that, even though it is true that there is such a possibility that he may take his eyes off for a few seconds or a few moments, but not for an extended enough period of time that you would violate the potential prohibition of yichud. Again, as I said, there is so much more to talk about and so many important things to consider. Let me just give you a few things to think about. Of course, the Shulchan Aruch writes, and we're going to end in 2 minutes, of course, the Shulchan Aruch writes that there are some heterim when we would say that yichud would not be a problem. For example, Pesach Pasuach, if you leave a door open, or if you have other people who can come into your home at any time, if they have a key, and it's realistic and reasonable that they may come in. But something that does come up, which really is not so clear, is if you go to a therapist of the opposite gender, and you're going to be in a room alone with that individual, and it's not like when you go to a doctor's office and a nurse can walk in at any time, right? We're talking about in a therapy session where you're in a very intimate setting with somebody of the opposite gender, and you may be secluded with that individual for quite a while. And sometimes you may go at hours when there's nobody around. And even if there were people around, nobody's ever going to walk in the middle of a session. I don't think that's the way it works. So that is a major shaila. In general, I would say, again, I don't have enough experience to know that this is true. And again, I'm just saying this as a word of caution, not because I have enough clinical experience. I have zero clinical experience. I just see what goes on in the community and I hear what happens. It is very questionable to go, forget about halacha, to go to a therapist of the opposite gender. You're sometimes the greatest professional may be the opposite gender, and then you have to think about it. How am I protecting myself? Forget halacha for a minute. How am I going to be protected? How am I going to be protected? Remember, a therapist is also a human being. I hate to say it, but a therapist is also a human being, and I'm not saying that it's absolutely us, or I don't know what the workaround is. I don't know what the answer should be, but it's definitely something that we need to think about in our community. There is a prohibition of yichud. Being alone in a room for 40 minutes with a therapist is a problem if it's of the opposite gender. You're speaking in a very intimate setting. You're speaking in a location where nobody else has the ability to walk in. It would be totally inappropriate for somebody else to walk in and disturb the session. We need to think about these issues, and we need to really consider them. Another question that comes up is, what about a doctor of the opposite gender? So what do you do about that? And there we say a number of reasons why perhaps that shouldn't be a problem, but primarily one of the reasons is because often in a doctor's office you're going to have a nurse, and it's totally appropriate for the nurse to come in and out of the room. Doctors and medical professionals have to be worried for their own jobs as well. A doctor has to be concerned, and the Gemara says, Uman lomara umnase, that sometimes you have a person who knows that they can risk their entire profession. You can risk your entire life. If I violate the confidence of my patient, if I do something that was inappropriate, that's it. I'm going to be disbarred, or I'm going to be, I don't know, what do you call it? What's the equivalent in for a doctor? You're going to be, you're going to lose your license. Is there a word for that? I don't know. But again, these are all factors, but the point is you have to go in with open eyes. You have to think about it. And you know what? If something feels strange, it is strange. It's wrong. Trust your gut. Yes, if a guy on a date does something to you that is not appropriate, it's not appropriate. And it doesn't matter what yeshiva he's in, and it doesn't matter whose shir he goes to. If he says something that's inappropriate or he does something that's inappropriate, trust your intuition. Trust that there's something wrong, and don't just let it slide. Don't just assume that that's fine. You have standards, and you're allowed to stand by your standards, and you must stand by your standards, and don't allow human beings who often make mistakes to allow yourself to be pulled into those mistakes along with them. So on that very happy note, it was a real...